Hari Om to all of you. This today we are going to start chapter 14 of the Bhagavad Gita. And chapter 14 is entitled Guna Traya Vibhaga Yoga Nama. Guna means the three gunas, Sattva, Rajas and Tamas. So Guna Traya. And Vibhaga means the division. How each guna, what is the effect, what is the characteristic of each guna, what is the effect of each guna, why it is so important for us to know, because all the three gunas are in us, in our physical body, in our mind, in our intellect, they influence our entire personality. So if we understand how the gunas are influencing us, our thoughts, our desires, the type of company we like to mix with, the type of materials we like to read, the places we like to go to, all this is influenced by the three gunas. And one guna will always rise to dominate the other two. So that's why everybody's personality is different. And the thing is, these gunas are a product of our past actions. By our past actions, we have inherited a certain mixture of gunas, and in this current life, these three gunas are influencing our personality. Whether we are religious, spiritual, whether we are running after worldly desires, or whether we are just ignorant and lazy, it's all dictated by the gunas. Now, while we are born with the gunas because of our past actions, it does not mean that we can not change the composition of the gunas. By using our present effort and free will, if we understand how the gunas work, we can change the composition of the gunas. Hence, in order to achieve the goals that we have set in our lives, and our personality will help us to attain that goal, once I've set a spiritual goal, then which type of guna will help me to reach that goal? Once I understand that, I will do everything I can to cultivate and make that guna stronger. So that my thirst for knowledge, my journey on the spiritual path becomes more and more easier. In the chapter 17, Krishna will tell us that how you pray, yajna, how you do your rituals, etc., can change your gunas. With what attitude? How you give dhanam, with what attitude can change your gunas? Yajna, dana, tapa. How you keep austerities, with what attitude you keep your fast, etc., also can change your gunas. And, sorry to say to all of you, but the food you eat also can influence your gunas also. Right? So, even the food also can influence the gunas also. We will, when we come to that, chapter 17, we will understand that better. Ahara, Yakya, Dana, Tapa, these four things can change our lifestyle, we can also change our gunas also. Okay? So with that basic understanding, let's understand something about the overall picture first of chapter 14. Now, what was chapter 13? In chapter 13, which we have covered, Krishna gave the very core essence of Vedantic teachings. The very core teachings of the Upanishads were presented to us in chapter 13. In what form? In the form of Atma, Anatma, Viveka. Viveka means to understand or differentiate between what is Atma and what is Anatma. But Krishna used different technical words. He said Kshetra, Kshetrajna, or Purusha, Prakriti. All different type of terminologies to use, but in essence it is one and the same. It is Atma, Anatma, Viveka. Differentiation between Atma, the subject, the experiencer, and Anatma, the object, the experienced. Okay, that is the Viveka. So what is Atma? What we covered in chapter 13. Atma is consciousness. It is the witness. It is changeless principle. Witness, conscious, changeless principle. That is Atma. Anatma is the totally opposite. It is inert. it is changing matter, and more important than that, it is endowed with the three gunas. Atma does not have the three gunas, anatma or matter has the three gunas. And this matter with the three gunas is enlivened by the atma, hence it comes to life. It is able to perform all types of transactions. So when I accept myself as atma, what happens? I watch all the transactions of the body-mind complex as the weakness, thus I am ever free. If I accept myself as atma. When I accept myself as anatma, that means this body, this mind complex, what happens? I entangle myself as a karta, as a bhokta, as the doer, as the receiver of my results. As a result, I experience punyam and papam, and I am caught in this endless cycle of jananam and maranam. Thus, knowledge of myself as atma and being convinced that I am atma, one lives as a jivan mukta and one can attain moksha. So that's why it is very important for us to first have knowledge of what is atma, what is anatma, because that is the very key to my freedom. And since all the three gunas are in prakriti, when we say prakriti means matter, matter means your body, your mind, your intellect, all that is matter. The spiritual journey is what? To transform ourselves from tamas to rajas, from rajas to sattva, and finally to transcend even the sattva also. And such a person in chapter 14 is called a gunatita, G-U-N-A-T-I-T. Tit means one who has overcome, who has overpowered all the three gunas. And how do we accomplish this transformation from tamas to rajas, rajas to sattva? This is accomplished by the three yogas. Karma yoga, upasana yoga and jnana yoga. Karma yoga is the process to convert tamo guna to rajoguna. How? By doing varieties of actions, all types of duties and responsibilities, we elevate ourselves and overpower the tamasic gunas and become rajasic, very active. Then from rajoguna to sattva guna, to bring the mind, to discipline that mind, because in rajasic mind, the mind is very extrovert, very active mind. Now we need to to quieten the mind and try to focus it on a single object. So for that we use upasana yoga, various prayers, chanting of mantras, etc., to focus our mind on the Lord. Whether it is saguna, mostly we start with saguna and then we come to nirguna. And also meditation is also advice. Then the mind becomes focused. Now the rajasic mind is focused. Then from rajas to sattva, we use the jnana yoga process to understand our very true reality. We drop the ego and we claim ourselves as the Atman. Okay? This transcending of the three gunas is basically the basis of this chapter 14. Okay? So we have to learn how to transcend from saguna to nirguna. Okay? Now, that's the title of this chapter here is Guna Traya Vibhaga, the division of the three gunas. Okay? How to be a gunati. And there is a seed verse in chapter 13. That seed verse is expanded in the whole of chapter 14. That seed verse occurs in chapter 13, verse number 21. So if you go back to chapter 13, verse 21, page 249, and look at the last two lines in the Sanskrit text. Chapter 13, verse 21, page 249. The last two lines in the Sanskrit text. Here Krishna said that Karanam Guna Sangosha Sadasat Yoni Janmashu. Meaning, Asya means for this individual, what type of individual who understands the who has the viveka or the knowledge of what is kshetraknya, who is able to distinguish between these two and claim aham atma asmi, claim himself as the atma. For such a person who has not attained this knowledge, Krishna says, sangha, attachment. Attachment to what? Sangha, guna. Guna, sangha. Meaning, attachment to the three gunas. If one does not have this knowledge that I am the consciousness and I am not the body, and one identifies with the body, then this attachment to the body, guna, sangha, means the attachment to this body, to this mind, to my possessions, to my family. Karanam, the word karanam is becomes the very cause. Cause for what? Sat, asat, yoni, janmashu. Janma means birth, yoni means wombs. In what type of wombs? Either good wombs or evil wombs. So as long as we are attached to this body, we do all actions from the standpoint of the ego. Even when I do good actions, I'm doing dhanam, but I do with ego, then I will get the punyam, that is birth in good wombs. But also I can do the same dhanam and I'm attached to this body, I do it with what we call with anger, with contempt, etc. Then I can also take birth in the evil wombs also. So it depends on our attitude to every action. That will determine our next birth and will keep us continuously tied up in this cycle of birth and death. So therefore, if I want to transcend, I do not want to get caught in this cycle of birth and death, what should I do? I should learn how to detach from these three gunas and become a guna tit. And that is the subject matter of the entire chapter 14, how to become a guna tit. So with that understanding, we come back to chapter 14 and we look at the very first verse. So in the first four verses of this chapter, Krishna will introduce a subject matter. Okay, and what is the subject matter? He says, if you look at the first line of verse 1, Sri Bhagavan Vacha, the Lord spoke, Pravakshami. Pravakshami means I will speak. So Krishna says, I am going to speak to you. On what? On jnanam. In the second line you see, the word jnanam is there. Knowledge. I am going to impart pravakshami. So vakshami means just to speak. When we say pravakshami means there is some essence, there is some depth in this knowledge. So when Lord Krishna says, aham pravakshami, there is something very valuable I am going to speak to you about. And that is jnanam, that is knowledge. What knowledge? Not just any ordinary knowledge, but the most supreme knowledge to realize the higher self, how to transcend the three gunas and attain moksha. And Krishna also says in the very first line, he says, Bhuya. Bhuya means, once again, I am going to speak to you. Why? I have already spoken everything in the last chapter. How to detach ourselves from this body-mind complex, he has already spoken. But now Krishna says, I am going to speak to you once again about the same knowledge again. So Adi Shankaracharya writes in his commentary, why does Krishna say again? And the reason is because when we are dealing with a very subtle matter, Atma is so subtle, to understand is not easy. What is the difference between Atma and Anatma? And to claim ourselves as Atma, this kind of knowledge must be repeated again and again for the mind to grasp the knowledge. So that's why Krishna says, I am going to repeat the same thing to you again. Repetition. And sage Vasishta, he wrote in the Vasishta Yoga, one of his scriptures that he wrote, text. He said, the truth does not become a conviction in you until it is heard again and again, and until it is reflected upon again and again. So how do I be convinced with this truth? To make it strong in me, to make it a conviction in me, I must hear it again and again and again, repeatedly. and I must reflect upon it again and again and again. Then only knowledge becomes a conviction. So Krishna says, Bhuya, I am going to repeat it for your benefit. And there are two adjectives which are used to describe this jnanam, this knowledge. One is uttamam and one is param. So uttamam also means superior. Param also means supreme. But there is a difference. The word param, supreme here, is to indicate that the subject matter of this knowledge is above the higher self. This knowledge is not apara knowledge, it is para vidya. There is apara vidya, which is lower knowledge, which is geography, history, science, etc. And there is para vidya, which deals with the self exclusively, with the consciousness. So that's why it is called param, jnanam, which is param, of the very highest nature. And it is also called uttamam. Knowledge is also superior. Why? Because when we compare this knowledge to all other type of knowledges which we have been receiving since childhood, through primary, through secondary, through university, all that knowledge, if we compare this knowledge of the self against that knowledge, and even if you talk about, if you have knowledge of rituals, you have knowledge of prayers, you have knowledge of all kinds of religious things, even higher than that knowledge is this knowledge. Now, why is that, that this knowledge is the most superior among all types of knowledges, including religious or what we call knowledge of doing rituals, etc.? Why is that this knowledge is deemed to be para vidya? We can understand that it is higher than history, geography and all that, but it is even higher than knowledge of rituals and what you call going to prayers and doing, going to temples and worshipping. So, knowing which we know everything, yes, true. What else?
It will not give us moksha.
It will not give us moksha. Because we know that even knowledge of rituals, knowledge of prayers also can give us finite results. Whereas this is the only knowledge that will take you to the infinite, which will lead you to moksha. Religious, all types of rituals will give you some form of anandam, but that is all finite anandam. It will not lead you to knowledge, it will not lead you to moksha also. So, this is the only knowledge which is called uttamam and it is called param for that reason. And one more thing Krishna wants to stress to Arjuna and to all of us is that this is not something new that Krishna has just cooked up just because Arjuna suddenly cried in front of him, surrendered to him. So Krishna suddenly said, let me think of some way how to revive this fellow. But now what he is saying, this knowledge which I am going to impart to you is a time-tested knowledge. It is a very ancient knowledge. It has been handed down from guru to disciple over thousands and thousands and thousands of years. So same thing I am telling you which has existed before. And who have benefited from this knowledge? He says, if you look at the third line, yach nyatva. Yach means by nyatva, by realizing. Nyatva means to attain or realize this knowledge of Atma, Anatma, Viveka. Sarva, sarve munaya. Sarve, all the munaya. Meaning, of course here the translation is given is sages. But who are the real munis? How do you define a real muni, a real sage? How would you define what? What would qualify to be for a person to be called a muni? Not just by residing in an ashram or just changing your clothes. Huh? Right. So what is it? What is that quality which you can call a person a muni? Okay. That means a muni is a contemplative person. One who is contemplated, one who has turned inward, that is a muni. One who leads an introvert life. So, it does not, it is irrespective of gender, it is irrespective of ashrama, whether we are a what we call grihas, or whether we are vanaprash, it is irrespective of all that. It is irrespective of what line of work you do, but a muni is defined by one who is not at all interested in the mundane goals of life. One who has turned his mind to the higher goals of life. Such a person is called a muni, a reflective person, an introvert person, okay, who has tuned the mind to a higher purpose of life. They are called munis. So these munis, sarve munaya, yajnyatva, they have realized this knowledge, and as a result of realizing this knowledge, what is the benefit they have attained? He says, itaha means right here, right now, meaning what? While living in this human birth, this knowledge can give you that benefit of what? They have diligently followed in this human form, they have diligently followed this spiritual path, and they have lived as a jivan mukta, and thus from that they have gataha param siddhi. Gataha means they have attained. What have they attained? Param, the highest siddhi. Here the highest siddhi is what? Moksha, which we have been given the four goals of life, the four purusharthas, dharma, karma, artha, moksha. So here param siddhi refers to which of the four goals? Moksha. Not dharma, not karma, not artha. But it does not mean that they did not pursue these three. They did pursue dharma, they did pursue karma and artha, but for what purpose? To attain moksha. So these three goals of dharma, karma, artha were secondary goals. They were goals needed to attain moksha. So the primary goal of life was moksha, and these people, they attain the highest goal, which is param siddhi, which is nothing else but moksha. Now, why is it that these people give prominence to moksha, to the goal of moksha in their life? Because they came to the realization that dharma, karma and artha can only lead to finite bliss. It is only moksha. That's why we must come to this understanding. Only when we come to this conviction that dharma, karma and artha cannot give me the finite bliss that I seek, then only you will turn your mind, you will value the goal of moksha. And such people who value the goal of moksha, who pursue the goal of moksha, they are the ones who are called munis. So muni defines the state of mind, okay, the ultimate goal. So one attains jivan mukta and then attains videha mukta. Now what happens to this person while living, and what happens to such a person, such a muni, when he dies? This Krishna explains in the very next verse, verse number 2. So in verse number 2 he says, idam jnanam, idam means this, jnanam means knowledge, upasritya, idam jnanam upasritya. Upasritya means those who have practiced, those who have put into practice, those who have resorted to what? Idam jnanam, to this knowledge. That means not only have they studied this knowledge, but they have also applied it, they have put into practical use this knowledge. Okay. Now, when we say they have put into practical use this knowledge, means what? What do you mean by that? What do you mean by putting in this knowledge into practical use? Having what?
Having viveka.
Having viveka. So that means maintaining the right mindset in life. Equipped with this knowledge, they maintain the right mindset throughout our life. How? By claiming yourself as the Atma, as the eternal consciousness. So that is called upasritya. You resort to this knowledge. You apply this knowledge through every transaction in your life. You maintain your attitude, aham, atma, asmi. And as a result, when they have lived in the right way in this life, what happens? Krishna says, while living, such a devotee, agataha. Agataha, you can see in the second line, means they attain. What do they attain? Mama sadharmyam. Mama means my, that means Lord's. Sadharmyam means they attain his attributes. They become godlike. While living, they practice with this attitude, the knowledge, aham atma asmi. The result is they become agata, they attain mama sadharmyam. They become one with me. They attain my attributes or my qualities. They attain oneness with God. So what is a very unique nature of God? One of the very unique natures. When we say we've attained oneness with God, what is the very one unique nature of this consciousness? Anandam samavat? Shanti? Samatvam? Purnatvam? Purnatvam is what? Fullness. Right? Fullness. That is the very mark of Brahman. That is the very mark of God himself, is Purnatvam. So that means what? The devotee who follows this lifestyle, who follows this mindset, attains the state of oneness with God, which means what? Purnatvam, fullness. So what do you mean by fullness? Contentment, that means what? There is no sense of insecurity. One does not have any sense of insecurity at all. There is total contentment. One enjoys self-sufficiency while living. So compared to others, how do they live? They live their life as slaves. Slaves to what? I'm slave to this person. I'm slave to this object. I'm slave to this experience or situation in life. I need all this in order to maintain my sense of balance, my sense of security. Whereas one who has attained and practiced this knowledge has attained that sense of total security. He is not dependent on any person. He is not dependent on any object. He is not dependent on any situation in life. All these can change, but the person remains Purnatvam. Right? State of Sachit Ananda, Jivan Mukta, Sthita Prajna, all these are various terms to describe such a person. When? Not upon death, but while living. That's a very important fact we have to. Otherwise, how do you know that you attain the state of Anandam after you die? By the time it's too late already. You want the Anandam when? While you are living. Right? So, it is a proof. That means you can enjoy this Anandam while living. And then what happens? In the next sarge, sarge means word to describe it is Srishti. The scriptures talk about Srishti. Srishti means the cycle of creation. When the next cycle of creation comes, na upajayate. Sarge api na upajayate. Na upajayate means this person does not take another birth. When the whole cycle of the whole creation is again woken up for the next cycle of sarge or srishti, this person does not take another birth in this cycle of creation. And why does he not take a birth in this cycle of creation? Because the last line, pralaya, when the time comes for the whole creation to be pralaya, means to be dissolved, to go back into the seed form, na what? Na vyathanti. Na vyathanti means he does not undergo any pain, any suffering. He does not have any sorrow upon his or her death. So upon the total dissolution, the person feels no pain, no suffering, no sorrow. Why? Because he has already identified himself with the higher consciousness. And thus, when the whole world is again created, this person does not take any more birth. That is what is called Videha Mukta, does not come back to take another body. So thus there are twofold benefits in attaining this knowledge. One, while living, you are a Jivan Mukta, Purnatvam. And number two, when there is a total creation of the world, there is no more rebirth at all. Not subject to rebirth at the next cycle of creation. So now Krishna is introducing the benefit of this knowledge. And now in verse 3, he wants to go back to the very dawn of creation. The very dawn of creation, how this whole creation has come about, how the gunas have come about, etc. So he's going to explain that this whole creation is a mixture of two principles. One is the three gunas, okay, which is called apara prakriti. We saw this in chapter 7, para and apara prakriti. So one part of the mixture of this whole creation is the three gunas and matter. So you have prakriti with the three gunas, that is one aspect of the creation. And then the other is gunatit, which is beyond the three gunas, which is called purusha, or is called kshetrajna, or consciousness, whatever you give the name. So that means at the beginning of creation, there only existed two things, that is consciousness and matter with the three gunas. Okay? And what we call in the scriptures also, this mixture, these two mixtures, is allegorically presented as the male and female aspect of creation. The male is the purusha, the female is the prakriti. So, which is the cause of the whole creation. That's why you see why in the depiction of all the gods, there's always a shakti there, right? Because this is to depict that the whole creation needs the two aspects, the male and female aspect of creation. So you have Shiva and Parvati, Brahma, Saraswati, and so on, Vishnu, Lakshmi, and so on and so on. One represents Purusha, one represents Prakriti. So here Krishna now explains the whole creation right from the start. Okay? So first what he says, Mama Yoni. Mama means my, Yoni. Yoni means womb. Now, notice this is what we call singular. Okay? It is not the multiple wombs. There is only one womb. Mama Yoni. One womb. Now, what does this womb of God represent? This womb is what is called as Prakriti. Why is called Prakriti? Because it contains the entire creation in unmanifest form. So this matter, which later will become manifest as the creation, in the original state, it is all totally unmanifest in this womb. Just like the whole tree, before it is manifest, it lies in unmanifest in the seed form. So the womb is like the seed which contains all the matter in the unmanifest form. And this is what is known as the female aspect of creation. Just like the female womb will carry the whole child in the unmanifest form. Okay? So it is in a dormant state. And he says this womb is called what? Is given the name Mahat Brahma. So Mahat here means great. A Brahma does not mean the Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva. Brahma has got many meanings. In this aspect, the word Brahma here means nourisher. So Mahat Brahma means the great nourisher. That means Mama Yonir, the womb, is known as the great nourisher. So why is it called the great nourisher? Why is Lord's womb, the female aspect of creation, called the great nourisher? Mahat Brahma, which means great. Mahat is great, Brahma means nourisher. Why is it the great nourisher? Mama Yonir Mahat Brahma. All creation comes from that one womb itself. That's why it is a great nourisher. It nourishes the entire creation. So this is called actually the universal mother, actually. The one womb, which is the universal mother, which nourishes, just like the when the child is in the mother's womb, it nourishes the child. So this big womb, Mahat Brahma, is a great nourisher. It nourishes the entire creation. And it is also called Mahat Brahma because, Number one, it is eternal. This cycle of creation, dissolution has been coming from this one womb. Creation, dissolution. That's why the womb, that one womb is eternal. That's why it is also called great. Number two, it is also infinite. Infinite meaning the number of creations it can produce is infinite. We don't even know what is there in the whole universe also. It has got a capacity to produce infinite creations. Right? So this Mahat Brahma, the great womb, which is the great nourisher also, what is it basically? It is also known as Maya. Maya means basically matter with the three gunas. The word Maya means matter with the three gunas. So only two things existed at the beginning of creation. What is? One is consciousness and one is the great womb. So now, when this consciousness and the great womb, they mix together, they come together, that's when the entire creation, all the 14 lokas, all the moving, non-moving creatures, everything in creation, including our karmas, our past karmas, everything comes into manifestation. Okay? So therefore, who are we? We are also a mixture of consciousness plus matter. Okay? Now what happens now in this great womb? Krishna says, Tasmin, in that womb, Tasmin, having described this great womb, Tasmin. So here first thing we must keep in mind that the entire creation is inert. It is only matter. Just like the fan is matter, as we discussed last week, matter cannot function without electricity. So this matter also, which is in the great womb, cannot function until it is blessed by Lord with the consciousness. So here Krishna says, in order for this womb now, the matter to function, Tasmin, in that great womb, Aham Dadami, okay, Tasmin, Aham Dadami, I deposit or I give what? Garbham. Garbham here means the seed. So what does the seed here represent? It merely represents the very powers of the Lord, that effulgence of the Lord, okay? He transfers that effulgence to the womb. So what happens when you transfer that effulgence into the womb? It energizes all the matter. Just like if you take a piece of iron which has no heat in it and you place a fire next to the iron rod, what happens? The heat transfers onto the iron rod. So this is basically what it means. Lord blesses this womb with his effulgence, with his consciousness, and as a result, the whole creation comes alive. Okay? He deposits the seed, meaning he blesses the womb with consciousness principle and activates the whole process of creation. And this blessing of the consciousness, if you remember, I drew for you a diagram which is called Chitabhasa, that is the reflected consciousness. Okay? Just like the mirror, when the sun reflects, we see the reflection of the sun in the mirror. This is the depositing of the seed into the matter that enlivens the whole matter. Okay? So this is called a reflected consciousness. How to understand this? Just like in the presence of electricity, a fan functions, in the presence of this consciousness, the whole womb also functions. All the matter comes to life also. Now, therefore, the only problem is we don't understand this. We see life, but we take it for granted that this is body has life, the mind has life. But we don't understand that behind this body, which is inert, this mind is inert, there is a unseen, what we call a life principle or a life-giving consciousness. Okay? So the body and mind is called achetana. You put an A in front of chetana, it's called achetana, which means basically it is inert, it has no life. Whereas the consciousness is called chetana, it has its own life. Okay? Now, if I use this body-mind complex, this anatma, and I mistake this body-mind complex as my real self, that is what the scriptures say, then begins our journey of samsara. We cannot get ourselves out of this entanglement of birth and death. As long as I accept myself as an atma, I will not get myself out of this entanglement. But when I understand that this body-mind complex is an instrument for me to use, and my real nature is atma, that is when I get out of this entanglement of birth and death. So that's why Krishna wants to introduce these two components for us to understand. One is the cause and one is the effect. Okay? So now what he says in this verse, when the Lord blesses matter, prakriti, what happens? Tatha, you can see the word in the fourth line, tatha, from this mixture, from this enlivenment, from this blessing, okay, bhavati occurs. What occurs? Sambhava is born, sarva bhutana, all the creations are born. From this one womb of matter or maya, when Lord blesses with the consciousness, the entire creation is born now. Sarva bhutanam bhavati. Everything comes into existence, which means the planets, the sun, the stars, the moon, the human beings, animals, insects, plants, moving, non-moving, everything comes into existence. Due to what? Why does it come into existence? Consciousness merely blesses. Why does one become an animal? Why does one become a human? Because of the karmas of the past birth. So, Bhagwan merely blesses matter, but what form or shape we take, it depends on the past karmas. Because the karmas are also enlivened. So, they also start functioning also. Okay. Now, verse number 4. He wants to talk about the... Yes, sorry. Ganesha also had two wives also, right? Ganesha also had two wives. Now, Hanuman did not have any wife, right? There was only one. But basically, we are talking about the Trinity, Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva. That is how it is represented to us, to tell us that this creation, dissolution and maintenance also need two aspects. Everything needs a male and female aspect. And then from that has come the entire creation also. Right? So that's why the Trinity also is represented as always as two also. Right? Although we say Brahma is the creator, but Brahma needs what? Brahma's consort is who? Saraswati. Why Saraswati? You need knowledge to create. Right? So that's why there is Saraswati with Brahma. Right? Okay, so all that, there is some kind of a meaning if we really go deeper into it.
Energy and energizer.
Energy and energizer, okay. Energizer battery. So what is the uniqueness of this Mahat Brahma, this great womb? This is what Krishna wants to explain. Now, we all know that one womb, any womb, human womb, is only capable of giving birth to one type of species. Right? A monkey womb can only give birth to a monkey. And a human womb can only give birth to another human. But what is the uniqueness of this womb? From this one womb come all varieties of wombs. Every type of womb in this world, whether seed or whether womb or whatever type of conception, everything has come from this one great womb. So here, Krishna explains, if you look at the word, second line there, murtaya. Murtaya means all the various types of forms, bodies, species, all the varieties in the creation that we see, sambhavanti, they are born. Every variety of species that we see in this creation, sambhavanti, they are born from what? Go back to the first line, sarva yonishu. Now the yonishu becomes what? No more singular, it is now plural. So from that one womb comes multiple wombs. Cow womb, dog womb, rat womb, whatever it is, all the varieties of wombs come out from that. Okay? So from one womb, first it produces sarva yonishu, varieties of wombs come. And all the origins of all these wombs are from that one great womb. That's why it is called the universal mother. That one mother gives birth to everything in creation. And then what happens, he says, tasham, tasham means of all these wombs, that means so many wombs, tasham, yoni, of all these multiple, multiple wombs, what happens? Mahat Brahma, what was the Mahat Brahma? That was the original womb, okay, the great nourisher, okay, the infinite nourisher, infinite in terms of size, infinite in terms of time also. And that's why in the scriptures it is told in the Puranas that how many types of species are there in this world? 8.4 million. So where did all this 8.4 million come out? From this one great womb, from this Mahat Brahma. Tasmin Brahma Mahat Yonir. All the yonis all came from this one great womb. Okay? And then what did the Lord do when all these varieties of wombs were produced? What did Lord do? He says, Aham, I the Supreme Lord, Bija Pradaha Pita. Bija means seed, Pradaha means give, Pita, I am the seed giving father. So in all these multiple, multiple varieties of wombs again, Lord says, I enliven them with my seed. Which means basically what? He blesses it with his consciousness. So everything comes to life. Seed giving father means he blesses the whole, all the wombs with life. Okay. Now comes the introduction. Yes. Father, right.
Why do you say seed giving creator?
Well, you can say the father is the creator also. It's the same thing actually, right. But then he also brings into context that there's a womb. That means the Lord has the womb also. So the womb contains a matter. Into the matter he introduces the seed, or he nourishes it, or he energizes it so that it gets life. Right. So you can use both Pita also, and also what you call that one? Creator also. Yeah. Keeps the seed. Yes, exactly. Yeah. So there are two aspects. The female is the womb, and the father is the seed giving father. But the seed giving means it blesses with consciousness. Okay. Okay. Now he introduces how the gunas have come about now. So now, what have we covered so far? That since we are also a mixture of two, Prakriti plus Purusha, which part of us is Prakriti? Body, mind, intellect, or rather everything that we are experiencing. Okay, the body I am experiencing is matter, the mind I am experiencing is matter, the intellect I am experiencing is matter, the world I am experiencing is matter. Then who is the Purusha? The experiencer is the Purusha. Okay? So these two things we have learned so far. One is changing, one is changeless. Okay? Now, so what he says now about the this gunas. Now guna also has got two meanings. One meaning of guna is property or attributes. So we say the gunas of a person, meaning the property or attributes. The second meaning of guna is ropes or shackle, because it binds a person. Sattva is a rope, rajas is a rope, tamas is also a rope. It binds the soul to the body. So guna has got two meanings here. Okay. Now, this is what he says in verse number 5 to introduce the topic of the gunas. So he says here, sattva, rajas, tamaha. These three gunas called Sattva, Rajas and Tamaha. Prakriti Sambhavaha. If you look at the second line, Guna, so the three Gunas. Prakriti Sambhavaha. Sambhavaha means these three Gunas are. Sambhavaha means born. Born out of what? Prakriti. What is Prakriti? Matter. So it is matter that gives birth to the three Gunas. The three Gunas are born out of matter. They are contained in matter. Okay. Now Prakriti's other name is also Maya. Okay. So when you say Maya, actually what you are saying is Prakriti. Means matter. Okay. Now since this matter has the three Gunas, therefore what does it tell us about our body, our mind, our intellect? Which is made of matter, which is Prakriti, means it also has the three Gunas also, right? So since the three Gunas are born out of Prakriti, matter, it also means our body, our mind, our intellect also has the three Gunas. Okay? So later on Krishna will explain all the nature of the three Gunas, and when one Guna is predominant, what is the nature of the person also. So when the Sattvic Gunas are dominant, the nature of the person is he or she is more inclined towards knowledge. There is thirst for knowledge. When Sattvic Gunas dominate Rajas and Tamas, how does it express in the individual? There is a thirst, a yearning for knowledge. It can be material knowledge, it can be spiritual knowledge, but that is the nature of Sattvic Gunas. Okay? Rajasic Gunas, they are dominant. They will drive a person to endless activity, one action upon another action, endless activity. And when Tamoguna is dominant, it is allergic to both knowledge and allergic to activity. So neither is there knowledge, neither is there tendency to do actions also. That is Tamoguna. So since all of us have these three Gunas and they determine our nature, we need to acquire knowledge of these three Gunas. Because all three Gunas are important. Why are Rajasic Gunas? Sattvic Gunas are important here for you, why? So that you are receptive to the knowledge. Rajasic Gunas? So at least you get in your car and drive here at least. If not, Rajasic Gunas are not there, you would be sleeping in the house also. So Rajasic Gunas also important. And Tamasic Gunas? After listening to the lecture, you have to go back and relax a bit also. So don't relax here, go back home and relax. So all three Gunas are important, you know. For us to rest and relax also, we need Tamas. But we have to be very careful about the mixture or the proposition, what we call the composition of the Gunas. Okay? So now, he says here, what do the Gunas do? What is the effect of the Gunas on us? So in the third line, third and fourth line, you see the word Dehinam. Dehinam here refers to the Jiva. Jiva is what? The reflected consciousness, not the original consciousness. Right? Sun reflects on the mirror, the reflected consciousness is called the Jiva. This Jiva here is identified as the Dehinam. Okay, there is a Dehi and there is a Dehinam. Okay? Dehinam is the reflected consciousness. Where is it? It is in the Dehi, it is in the body. So this consciousness which is reflected in the body, what happens? What is the function of the three Gunas? Okay? When the Jiva identifies with the body, Nibat Nanti, it creates the bondage. So Nibat Nanti means it is a bondage. When the reflected consciousness identifies with the body, when the Dehinam attaches itself to the body, then the bondage starts, the Nibat Nanti, means bondage. Gets bound to what? Gets bound to the body. But what is the original nature of this Jiva? What is the original nature of this Jiva? It is what? The word here is used, avyayam. Avyayam means what? It is immutable, it is changeless. But forgetting its original nature, it gets bound to the body, and thus it is what we call it is nibbananti, it is creates a bondage. Bondage between the reflected consciousness and the body. That's why the gunas are called the ropes that bind it together. So in fact, there's a very simple diagram. I don't know whether I drew it for you all last time. To understand this, a very simple diagram to understand this bondage. I think I've drawn this for you before, but anyway. So this is the world. And this is the jiva. And this is the body. So just like that, we can take the the body as a piece of metal, the jiva is the magnet, and body and the world is basically the same. So what happens when the magnet is attracted towards the metal? Okay, use this as the wood. Okay, this is a magnet. Okay, so when actually the wood is not attracted to magnet, right? It is wood cannot be attracted to magnet. But what happens because of the three gunas? Because of the three gunas, when the jiva identifies with the body, what happens? This is a piece of wood. It gets attracted. It gets bound with the three gunas. It gets attached to the magnet. By right, it has got no association with the world. But because of the three gunas, this piece of wood now gets attached to the magnet. Okay? Now what happens? When you cut these three ropes, this automatically goes back to God. So it is actually, by right, wood should not be attracted to magnet, but it is the identification that brings the wood and the magnet together. So the process is to detach, to cut the three ropes and go back to the Lord itself, the consciousness. So here he says, nibbananti, it binds. The three gunas, sattva, rajas, tamas, all three guna born out of matter, what do? Nibbananti. They bind the jiva to the body. But what is the original nature of the jiva? It is avyayam, it is changeless. Okay? And because of our delusion, we wrongly identify with it. So it is nothing but delusion, moha. Because of this delusion, we wrongly identify with the body, mind, and thus we get associated. Everything happens to the body, affects me. Everything happens in my mind, affects me. Okay. Now further than that, what happens in verse number 6? So from verse, now he has introduced the subject matter up to verse number 5. Now from 6 to 18, verses 6 to 18, he is going to analyze each guna separately. What is sattva? What is rajas? What is tamas? And how is he going to identify or deal with the three gunas? He is going to talk about different topics. The first topic he is going to talk about is called lakshanam. L-A-K-S-H-A-N-A-M, lakshanam. Lakshanam means the nature or the quality or the definition of each guna. What do you mean by sattva? What is rajas? What is tamas? Okay. And this dominance of each guna will also determine our inclination to the type of work we normally take up. So what type of work are we inclined to? What type of work we find favorable will also depend on the guna, which is dominant in us. Therefore, that is why this whole caste system has been totally misunderstood. The caste system which has been practiced in India today is called Jati. Jati means it is given by the house in which you are born. So that means there is no freedom to change. Whereas the caste system, which is defined in our scriptures, is a guna-based caste system. Means gunas can change, so your caste system is not fixed. So therefore, depending on the guna, if sattva guna predominates, then you are called a brahmana. So brahmana is not one who is a priest. What is a brahmana? One who is inclined towards knowledge, one who likes to seek knowledge and likes to teach knowledge. That is a brahmana. He can be born in a household of laborers, but because he is a teacher, he is called a brahmana. Why? Because he's got predominant sattvic gunas. Kshatriya has which guna dominant? Rajasic. Rajasic, therefore, active. Therefore, Kshatriya is one who is in the work of administration, government departments, law and order. Okay? But Vaishya is which dominant? So which guna is dominant? So Vaishya is which guna dominant? Rajas. So Kshatriya is Rajasic, Vaishya is Rajasic, then how come?
Mixture of tamas.
Where? Mixture of tamas where? So a Kshatriya has got Rajas, Vaishya has got Rajas, but Kshatriya is Rajas dominated, backed by Sattva. Okay, now when Sattva backs Rajas, it means that I am active, but because Sattva is backing me, I am active in serving people. That's why I am in administration, I am in law and order. Vaishya is Rajas dominated, but backed by Tamas, which means I am active, but I am selfishly active. I do work and earn for myself. So that's the difference between a Kshatriya and a Vaishya, although both are Rajasic, they are backed by two different gunas. And finally is the Sudras, who are Tamasic dominated, and therefore, although they are laborers, they do action, but generally they are not very bright people, right? So that's why the division of the caste system is based on gunas and not on jati. So society requires all. We require brahmanas. So we must not look down. That's why the current caste system looks down upon laborers. But that's not the case. In the Vedic caste system, all four were respected because we need all four to function. The society needs four, all four. Brahmanas who take up knowledge, Kshatriyas who take up administrative and enforcement duties, and Vaishyas take up business, and Sudras are the labor force. So the first topic that Krishna is going to cover is what? Lakshanam. What is the Lakshanam of Sattva, Rajas, Tamas? Individually he will tell us. The second topic that he is going to take up in verses 6 to 18 is called Bandhanam. Bandhanam means how each guna binds, how Sattva binds, how Rajas binds, how Tamas also binds. So when you go and do this havan, you know, you notice that they will put the three colors outside the havan. When you do a havan, that fire ceremony, normally they painted with three colors. What are the three colors? White, which means which guna? Sattvic. Then red, which is Rajas, and black, which is Tamas. So what is the significance? Why they paint three colors outside? In a way, transcend your three gunas. So what you're offering into the fire, I'm offering my ego, my lust, my greed, my anger, everything. I transcend the three gunas and offer it into the fire of knowledge. So that is the purpose. Next time you go, when you're doing the havan, look at that. The three colors should be painted.
Around the havan.
Yeah, around. On the out, what do you call it? Perimeter of the havan. Right? White, red and black. So the second topic is Bandhanam, method of bondage. The third topic is called Lingam. Okay, what is Lingam? Lingam here, the word, you know, like we say Shiva Lingam, right? Shiva Lingam. What does the word Lingam mean? Somebody got to shut off that phone, please. Okay. Okay, lingam means what? Lingam means a mark or an indication. So that's why we call it Shiva Lingam. Why we call Shiva Lingam? It is a mark or an indication of what? Of the what we call unmanifest consciousness. How is that unmanifest consciousness? It is represented by the Lingam. That's why we call it a Shiva Lingam. Shiva is unmanifest, but we worship him through the Lingam, which is his manifestation. So here the third topic is Lingam, which means, you see, gunas we cannot see. How do I know you got sattvic gunas, rajasic gunas, tamasic gunas? How do I know? Only from your character and your personality. So what type of character, personality you have, then I can know whether you are sattvic or rajasic or tamasic dominated. What type of books you read, what type of company you mix with, what type of places you go to, all these will are the indications or the lingam of which guna is dominant. So this will also give us a kind of checklist to understand our own nature also. That's why at the end of this I always have one, what I call, take the guna test. I've downloaded from the internet. You can go through this series of questions and determine which guna is dominant in you. Right? Supposing you like to get up late in the morning, then you know which guna is dominant in you. Right? So like that kind of thing, very practical. Supposing at your work, your desk is very messy, you know what type of guna you have, right? So all that kind of thing. Or you like to eat spicy food, rajasic gunas, right? Tamasic means people like to eat leftover food. Okay, that's the difference. Yeah, leftover food. Food cooked and kept after 3, 4, 5 days and all that. That's tamasic. The what? Actually, what is DNA? DNA is basically the three gunas. The mixture of the DNA is our personality, right?
Yeah.
Right, they say mother, father, personality comes into the child, right? So, that is basically the gunas. Put in another way, we call it DNA, right? So, third topic is lingam. We can perceive from the personality of a person what is the guna which is predominating. Fourth topic is gati, G-A-T-I-H, gati. Gati means, if this guna dominates in your life, at the time of death, where would you go? So the direction of travel. Sattvic guna where you go, rajasic guna where you go, tamasic guna, gati. At the point of death, what is the cause of travel? And the fifth topic is called phalam, or consequence of each guna while alive. If you have this guna, what would be the consequence? Rajasic, what, and so forth. Okay. So the five topics are there. Lakshanam, Bandhanam, Lingam, Gati and Phalam. So these five topics are broken down into all the three gunas also. Okay. Now the first two topics, Lakshanam and Bandhanam, of sattvic gunas is given in verse 6. Okay. That means Lakshanam and Bandhanam of sattvic gunas is given in verse 6. Lakshanam and Bandhanam of rajasic gunas is given in verse 7. And Lakshanam and Bandhanam of tamasic gunas is given in verse number 8. Okay, so 6, 7, 8 is the Lakshanam and Bandhanam of individual three gunas. Okay, first we want to know what do you mean by sattvic gunas? What is the definition of sattvic gunas? So verse 6, Krishna talks about sattvic guna Lakshanam. So here he says, Tatra, Tatra means among the three gunas. Okay. And where are the three gunas? In Prakriti. So always keep this in mind. Gunas are always in Prakriti, never in the Purusha. So among the three gunas, Krishna says, sattvic guna, sattvam, the first quality of sattvic guna is nirmalatvat. You can see in the first line. Tatra sattvam nirmalatvat. So nirmalatvat means sattvic guna is pure, it is transparent. So what do we mean by sattvic guna is pure, it is transparent? Transparent for what? Not that the light can shine through you, you know, like that. When we say sattvic guna is, the nature of sattvic guna is nirmalatvat, it is pure, it is transparent, it means when our mind is more and more sattvic in nature, body, mind, intellect, it is able to receive the reflected consciousness in within. We are able to feel this Sachit Ananda. The more pure, the more sattvic the mind becomes, the more we are able to experience this Anandam within. That's why it is called Nirmalatva. Whereas Rajasic Gunas are dominant, there is only greed, there is envy, there is pride. It is contaminated. The more the mind gets contaminated, it is like pure water, you put dirt and dust and all in it. What happens? The sun cannot reflect in dirty water. So when the mind becomes more sattvic, it becomes more Nirmalatva. It is able to experience that Anandam within. It is in a state of restfulness, bliss. What is the second nature? It is in the second line, you see, Prakashakam. Prakashakam means it has the capacity. When you are sitting especially and listening to a spiritual lecture, it is able to receive and absorb the knowledge. So it becomes very receptive to spiritual knowledge. So it is very easy. The more sattvic gunas you have, the more receptive you are, the more such knowledge can remain in you also. You can receive and you can absorb. Prakashakam. So because sattvic guna is totally opposite to tamasic. A tamasic mind is a dull mind. It sits in the class, it will go to sleep. But a sattvic mind is very hungry. It is able to absorb, receive and absorb that knowledge. Okay? And a rajasic mind is a very disturbed mind. It is running all over the place. So it can never ever sit down quietly and receive and absorb knowledge. So that's why the sattvic mind is said to be prakashakam. It is a revealer, prakashakam, shining. Okay? And anamayam. Anamayam, the word anamayam comes from the root word amaya, which means sorrow. So anamayam is what? A mind which is sorrowless. So what type of mind is sorrowless? At peace. A mind which is tranquil. The more and more sattvic you become, you experience tranquility, you experience peace, you experience serenity. That is the very nature. That is the nature of sattvic. Why is the mind at peace? Why is the mind in a state of tranquility? Huh? All the impurities have gone down. The reason the mind is so tranquil is because our thoughts are not so preoccupied with the world. A sattvic mind has got higher ideals in life, has got higher values or goals in life. So such a mind is not entangled with the mundane goings and comings on of the world. That's why that sattvic mind is more tranquil. And that's why such a mind is very conducive for study and contemplation. Okay? Whether it is worldly knowledge or spiritual knowledge. But now comes a warning. So far, nice things you have told. Sattvic gunas is nirmalatva, it is prakashakam, it is anamayam. But what? Sattvic guna will also bind you also. How? How does it bind? When the mind is sattvic, you want an atmosphere that is very conducive, that is very quiet. One phone went off, what happened? Everybody got agitated. Why? Because we don't want that kind of disturbance, right? So a sattvic mind always looks for a quiet, serene, contemplative atmosphere. But can we always get a contemplative, serene atmosphere? No. There will always be some disturbance. So that's why it also binds us. We want that kind of setup, but we cannot always get that. And that brings about some form of agitation also. So we get attached to, and also we get attached to happiness. When you get too much attached to happiness, what happens? You want to stay in that. So any sorrow comes, you also cannot handle it because you are always attached to a state of happiness also. Because the problem is we can never control the external environment. So we must never get attached to that state of happiness also. So when the sattvic mind cannot get a right, tranquil environment, it desires for study, contemplation, meditation, it gets disturbed. So what Krishna says here? Sattvic mind is sukha sangha. Sukha, you can understand, is happiness. Sangha means attached to happiness. Sukha Sangha. Our sattvic mind is attached to state of joy, peace, tranquility. It's always anchoring for a very conducive environment which is calm and serene. So, Sukha Sangha, and because we are dependent on that kind of environment, and an external environment which we cannot control, it causes some kind of disturbance in us also. Yes, exactly. So, but when we can control our mind, means what? Whether the environment is conducive or not conducive, I am in a state of peace. But a sattvic mind gets attached to that kind of environment. It wants always a state which is quiet, which is tranquil and all that. So, that's why there is a form of attachment also. Right? And any attachment is called what? What is another word for attachment? Addiction. So, attachment is a form of addiction. I want that, I must have that. Right? So, Sukha Sangha. Whereas a steadfast, one of the qualities of 20 divine qualities that Krishna gave us in chapter 13 was what? Steadfast and self-control. So, a sattvic mind is not steadfast and under self-control if it is attached to happiness. So to go beyond that means what? I must have a mind which is under my control, self-control. Whether the environment is favorable or unfavorable, I will be in a state of self-control. So Sukha Sangha. Not only it is Sukha Sangha, but it is also Jnana Sangena. So there is Sukha Sangena, Jnana Sangena. Sangha means attachment to what? Jnana, knowledge. So what do you mean by attachment to knowledge? How can that bind us?
Happy because there is knowledge.
So what is the problem with that? You're happy that you have the knowledge. What is the problem with that? I mean, don't mean you don't come back for class next week, you know, because Jnana Sangena, I don't want to be attached to knowledge. So you see, initially we are in a state of ignorance. There's so much of ignorance in our mind. When this knowledge comes, it clears our ignorance. The result is what? I'm at peace, right? So all my ignorance has been removed, my doubts have been removed, my confusion has been removed. Now with the dawn of this knowledge, I am in that state of peace. But what happens? Now I'm very happy. All my ignorance, all my doubts, my confusion, all been removed now. But now what happens? Is that the end of your spiritual journey? So what is the next stage? This is only sravanam, mananam. Then comes nididhyasana. I have to experience the consciousness. But if I'm happy and content with this knowledge, I just remain with that. I'm very happy, I'm very content. All my ignorance, all my doubts are removed. I don't progress. As one somebody sent a very nice WhatsApp message, God cannot be found in books, God cannot be found in scriptures, you have to discover it within yourself. So having the knowledge and just being happy and satisfied with the knowledge also is a very binding factor also. You have to be very careful. And not only that, it also can bring about some arrogance. You know, when you meet other people, I know Bhagavad Gita, you do not know. So it can bring about some arrogance also, you know, we have to be very careful. And that's why it's also very important when sometimes people ask you, because they think that you know about the Gita, it's better to remain, keep your mouth shut. Because it's unnecessary, it brings about arrogance. To people, they just want to sort of test you and all that, you know. And then you think that you know so much, you can advise them. So better keep your mouth shut. So, sattvic mind develops a greed. Greed for what? Rajasic mind develops a greed for money, right? Sattvic mind develops a greed for what?
Knowledge.
I want to know more. This is not enough. Gita class not enough. I want Upanishad. Upanishad not enough. I want Puranas. I want to know more and more and more. How much more are you going to know? The question is how much of knowledge you are going to accumulate. At one point, as Shankara says, you have to keep aside your books now and then try to experience that consciousness. So we have to be very careful. Knowledge is good, greed for knowledge is good, but you should not get entangled and addicted to it. We've got to move on beyond that also. We got to progress. Okay. So, a liberated person, how is a liberated person defined? As a person who does not depend on quietude, on seclusion for fulfillment of happiness. I am not dependent on the external environment. Whereas a sattvic mind is very dependent on such a kind of peaceful environment. Right? So, sattvic guna also is a type of bondage. It is a noble dependence, it is a noble bondage, but it is also still a bondage also. Right? So, Krishna says, be careful. Badnati, it binds us. Binds us to what? Sukha and jnana also. Okay, so in verse number 7 now, he deals with rajasic gunas. What is the lakshanam and the bandhanam of rajasic gunas? Now, since the gunas also in all of us, in our mind, in our body, if I want to accomplish any goals in life, first of all, I must understand my personality. I must have a thorough knowledge of my own nature. Because why? Like any equipment you want to use for a purpose, you must understand the nature of the equipment, then you can use it for the right purpose. So if I understand my equipment, my body, my mind, my intellect, I will know how to utilize it and reach the goal which I want. Right? So, these gunas also will dominate the choices I make in life. What type of choices I make in life? As I said, the places I go to, the friends I cultivate, the materials I read, all these are dominated, these choices in life, by what kind of gunas I have also. Okay? So now here Krishna talks about Rajo Guna, Lakshanam and Bandhanam. What is the nature of Rajasic Gunas? There are nature of attachment and passion. Highly extrovert mind. Okay? If Sattvic Guna likes to withdraw and go to quiet seclusion for study, Rajasic Guna fellow wants to go out into a noisy place, into a dynamic place and all that. Okay? So Rajasic Guna pushes an individual into relationships, into interactions with people and objects. So here Krishna says, now he uses the word Viddhi. Viddhi means may you know. May you know the nature of Rajasic Guna. The Lakshanam is what? It is Makam. You see the word Ragat Makam. Makam means it's the nature of Raga. Rajasic Gunas are the nation of the nature of Raga. Raga is what? Raga is passion. Passion, attachment to what? Vibrant activity. Now we may say, what is wrong? So, you have to be active in life, isn't it? We can't be sleeping and lazy. Rajasic gunas push a person into activity. So, what is wrong? Isn't it good to be active? So, what is wrong? For selfish reasons. A positive aspect of Rajasic mind is, it is dynamic mind. But the downside of it is highly restless mind also. And it is very selfish mind also. When Rajasic Guna dominates us. So a Sattvic Guna, now if we look in terms of productivity and peace of mind, if you look into these two areas, productivity and peace of mind. Sattvic Guna got productivity? Is there productivity in a Sattvic Guna?
Yes.
Is there peace of mind?
Yes.
Yes. Rajasic Guna, is there productivity?
Yes.
Is there peace of mind?
No.
Tamasic Guna, is there productivity?
No.
Is there peace of mind?
No.
Oh, yes, there is peace of mind. Tamasic guna, ignorance is bliss. I don't care what is happening, I am in a state of bliss. I am always sleeping and eating and sleeping. So this is how we can see when we talk about productivity and peace of mind. That's the difference between sattvic, rajas and tamas. So a rajasic mind is dynamic. But there is total restlessness, there is no peace of mind. A Rajasic mind cannot sit quietly for a few minutes. You can know who are the Rajasic people, especially when they are reciting some prayers. You know how to know who are the Rajasic people? Hand is moving, the leg is shaking, they just can't sit still. They are just waiting, ready, waiting to get out of the hall or something like that. So Rajasic mind, totally restless, very allergic to meditation, don't ever prescribe meditation to a rajasic person also. You know, that's why they say, have you ever seen a meditative monkey? Monkeys are always jumping around, they cannot sit down. So sattvic guna mind, the difference is what? It uses jnana indriyas. Predominantly a sattvic guna person mind will use the jnana indriyas, always using the ears, the eyes to attain knowledge. Rajasic guna person will predominantly use the karma indriyas, the hands and the legs and all that. So that is the difference also. So here Krishna says, the rajasic guna mind has got trishna. You see the second line, the word trishna. Trishna means thirst, hankering. Okay? Trishna, hankering for what? Sattvic guna has got thirst for more and more knowledge. Rajasic guna has got hankering for what? Asanga. Asanga means attachment. Attachment for what? Two things. Two things you can have attachment for. What two things? A rajasic mind constantly attached to two things only. Mind is constantly attached to two things. What I don't have and what I have. This is what the rajasic mind wants to know. What I have, how do I hold on to it? What I don't have, how do I attain it? So the thirst is always there for what I have and what I don't have. Constant occupation with these two things in life. And for what else the rajasic mind is, we have to come back next week and go through verse number 7. Okay. Acquisition and preservation, exactly. Right.
So what did it ask you, like in the, what do you call that, the Mahabharata? This guy, Parshottam, is it? Parushurama,
yeah.
He was a Brahmin.
Right.
But he wanted to go to war and he wanted
right.
to learn how to do that, which is a Kshatriya.
Right, right.
And then when it came to the fight, Karun was supposed to be a chariot rider's son.
Mm-hmm.
And he was not allowed to go, but even then the caste system.
No, but you must see that, actually,